What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Big Facts No Cap, the only podcast that's number one with arch rivals and people who are fans of the movie Arrival. I'm Adrian, as always, here with Paul. Let's get big factin', let's get no capping.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
What's been going on with you?
What has been going on with me?
I don't know. I've been surprised by, I think it's been like three or four episodes in a row where you've brought in nothing. And I was like, what is Paul doing with his life? What is going on?
I've been reading a lot lately, and that's not as fun to bring up for a media roundup. You know that one part in the song Toxic by No Name where there's like a woman going on a rant about like, you don't know love? I looked up where that sample was from, and it was from Eddie Murphy's Boomerang in 1992.
What do you possibly think you know about love? You know, I'm sick and tired of men using love like it's some kind of disease you just catch. Love should have brought your ass home last night.
Didn't you just hear me say I was sorry?
I heard you say you're sorry. You're sorry and you're tired. You don't love me. You don't love Jacqueline. You only love your damn self.
How could you say I never cared about you?
Pretty fun movie. You know, not everything has aged well in it, but a lot of it is still really great.
Is that how you're usually picking your movies these days?
No Name samples? Yeah, mostly.
That makes sense. So you got a book club? Why not have a movie club?
I watched The Craft with Isabel.
Oh, classic.
You know, I kind of knew its cult status. The first 70% of the movie, I was like, this is exactly what I expected. Like, the aesthetics, the energy, the fun. And then it got really dark in that last 30%. I didn't expect it to have such a dark energy and dark ending. I didn't expect some of the characters to not be redeemed in some way, like for them to just be that villainous.
This is the three teenage witches in the movie? Is it that one? It's been a long time since I watched that one. I don't remember what happened at the end. I don't remember whose twisted mind came up with the ending.
And then I watched Halloween for the first time ever. Yeah, holds up. That's a great film. That was wild.
Really?
Yeah.
I never really liked Mike Myers that much, except when he's doing Trek.
Yeah, it's not scary at all. I think if I was watching it because I wanted to be scared, I wouldn't have enjoyed it. But it's like, I don't know, just like the pacing. Maybe it's like a little bit of the aesthetics of like shot on film, the way the characters are acting. I don't know. All of it felt very cozy. It was nice.
Is that the one with Jamie Lee Curtis?
Yeah.
Right.
Looks, I looked it up because I was like, was she already 30 when this was being filmed? And no, I think Jamie Lee Curtis's face just reads as mature to me, but because she was 20, but she seemed, she looked so much like an adult. And honestly, all of them did. But I think it's one of those classic things that everybody points out where it's a fashion. Made all those like 20-year-old actresses look like 35-year-old moms to me. What'd you get up to this week?
Let's see. What did we do? Goblin has their shorts coming out, their graduation shorts. So it's a, it kind of looks like it's spelled like goblins, G-O-E-B-L-I-N. It's a French animation school where at the same time every year, they release all the senior projects from their students. And they're usually pretty fun, usually pretty varied in style. There's been some good ones so far. There's a new album from Acacia Strain called You Are Safe From God here, and it rips all the way through. If you're looking for some fun time metal to listen to, I'd recommend it. And then I did a double at the Dreamland this weekend. I went to go watch Marcel Yankovic's The Tragedy of Man, which was a 2-hour and 40-minute animated feature about the devil showing Adam different parts of history, where the thesis of the film seems to be Adam at the end breaking down, saying that life is suffering and then you die, which it was kind of interesting because that was my mom's catchphrase growing up, is life sucks and then you die. So it was kind of cool to watch a movie where that was basically the thesis.
When did you first hear that? Is that a mantra you grew up with or you just learned that about her?
Literally what I just said. It was my mom's catchphrase growing up. She said it all the time. I don't know if, I don't think she waited for me to become a certain age before saying it. I think she was throwing that out all the time.
Do you think that affected you? You're not a particularly, like, grim person.
I think it gave me a realistic outlook on life. And then the other movie was Dead from Izzy Rowland from Dropout.
Oh, shit. Nice.
Yeah. Vic Michaelis was in the movie. Zach Oyama played a doctor, which is fun. Brendan Lee Mulligan plays the love interest, which is fun. He had a line that was very much like, I felt like I could tell that he either improv'd it or maybe wrote it. But yeah, it was trying to blend some like real life dad issues and some sadness with some real humor. And I don't think it hit on all cylinders in either, but it did pretty good at both. I mean, it's a weird like indie film. I think I thought about seeing it when they were showing it in San Francisco and I was like, I'm not that big of a fan of these people. But now that it was in Sacramento, I was like, yeah. So if it comes into your neighborhood, that's what I would say. I'm going to do a Michelin rating. If it's within like a 10-minute drive of where you are, you should go watch it.
Shout out to Zach Oyama. Sometimes the person you want to talk the most to about your grief is the person who's gone. I forget why he said that during a Dropout episode, but
that's so great. yeah, that was all the stuff that I did this weekend and this week. But yeah, that's all I got going on.
So wait, have you watched Halloween before? The one thing about the movie that got me from a comedic angle was how unqualified the therapist, Michael Myers' therapist, seems. It just, at every point when he's talking about, like, Michael Myers...
Wait, Michael Myers goes to therapy, or is this, like, flashbacks from him?
Because he's in an insane asylum, and so when he escapes, his doctor from the asylum is the one, like, coming to warn everybody about him. Like, he's gonna come to this town, I know him. He's pure evil. And it's like, is that your medical diagnosis? Is that he's pure evil?
Yeah. Is that a medical? Is that in the DSM?
He's like, I looked into his eyes. They were black as can be. And it's like, that can't possibly be what you're supposed to be doing as a mental health specialist in an asylum, is judging their eyes for evil.
You know, unrelated, but I've also been watching the new season of Ink Master, which has been really fun. But literally the exact challenge that they always make jokes about for Ink Master is that they had to tattoo a person of color.
Yeah.
And one of the girls disagreed with her canvas and ended up tattooing herself. So she got to tattoo a white person anyways, which is a cool way to go about it.
Oh, yeah. I never thought about that because there's... I didn't think about the idea that real people are getting tattooed for that show. So there might be disagreements. Yeah.
They're being a bunch of freeloaders in there complaining.
What did he not want?
A simplified version of the tattoo that he was getting, which was insane.
Ooh.
Yeah. It was the continent of Africa in a bottle, forming a tree that sprouts out of the bottle, and the tree's limbs turns into the other continents, but not Africa, because Africa's in the bottle.
Oh.
Yeah. That's it was a crazy. Stupid tattoo.
Did she get that tattoo on herself? Because that's crazy for a white woman to put.
No. Since she got to tattoo herself, she got to do whatever she wanted.
And she put Europe in a bottle?
Sprouting. Yeah. She made it really Eurocentric.
She made a real pro-colonialism argument out of the Africa theory.
It was pretty cool. I mean, that's happened a couple times on the show. I know a guy had to tattoo his own knee one time when he got into an argument with his canvas. Also, I don't know why, but someone pointed out recently, because the female judge has just unleashed her new look where she's going shaven head. And so someone pointed out that all of the judges now have no hair. And they're like, it's just a show where a bunch of people with no hair judge people with hair. I was like, that's not untrue. That's a funny way to summarize this show.
That's me and Phil when we're on Discord playing Fortnite. Just a bunch of no hairs.
That's
when
you guys die in Fortnite and you guys watch me try and fumble my way into surviving.
Hey, you do a great job, buddy. Oh, is that part of our media roundup? The Simpsons map on Fortnite.
The Simpsons map on Fortnite.
Come on now.
And you got that Witch Marge going on now.
Yeah. I unlocked Witch Marge. So things are going well in life. Things are
going pretty well. Yeah, you got the battle pass and everything.
I said this to you and Phil while we were playing, but for how much of a mean cynic I am about people who lean too much into nostalgia with things like Marvel movies, the Simpsons map on Fortnite has made me realize my brain works the exact same way, because I've been clapping like a dumb seal for every single thing I see in there.
We still haven't gotten to Moe's yet. We need to go to Moe's.
We need to go to Moe's. Yeah.
Welcome to Moe's.
I like run up to the Tomako farms and I'm like, ooh, Tomako, I remember that. I remember that episode.
I remember.
A trapdoor in Mr. Burns' office. Ooh, that's funny. I've seen that.
Mm-hmm. And Phil having the Bart emoji where he gets to ride on the skateboard. That's really cool.
Yeah, that is fun.
All right. Yeah. Well, do you want to get into the theme?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
Yeah. So we're doing brand rivalries. So the classic ones I thought of were like Coke and Pepsi, Xbox and PlayStation.
Is that one where, like, Nintendo's the Sigma that doesn't even compete with the others, or how does that
fit into the Alpha? Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, obviously all of these things have a little bit of, what would you call them? They're not completely black and white. There's, like, gray areas and other competitors.
Mm-hmm.
Mario and Luigi. Although
that's why, for the opening rhyme, I was trying to think of what rhymed with RC Cola, but...
Ooh. What are some other big ones? Burger King and McDonald's.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Toaster Strudel and Pop-Tart. That one always sticks out into my mind because I do remember... I guess the whole point of it is that they're supposed to be fungible items, but I remember Toaster Strudel coming at Pop-Tart, being like, ooh, who wants to eat this stupid room temperature thing when you can have a hot Toaster Strudel? And I was like, you can toast a Pop-Tart. Like, they're acting as if, like, the technology doesn't exist to also heat up their item.
You know,
but I remember it being so shots fired. Like, I was like, damn.
I didn't realize you could toast a Pop-Tart until the commercials where the Pop-Tart... Remember when they had those, like, line drawing commercials where it was, like,
oh yeah,
with a Pop-Tart on a bike trying to, like, hop the toaster and then he would, like, fall in and get toasted? I was like, oh, they are the right shape. You could toast them.
Well, they are also that... yeah, it's almost like they're designed for a toaster. That was another thing that people swore by, doing them frozen, which I don't think I ever did, but yeah.
You know, I didn't ever really like Pop-Tarts, so that's maybe why I didn't realize that.
My neighbors were into them, so I think that's where I would try them
Is it
sometimes.
A white person food? Am I being a little... Am I being one of those people by saying that? But I just feel like...
I don't know.
The people who love them were all white.
You're upsetting Charlie right now.
Oh, no.
You know how much he hates when we say things are white people things. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, because none of the cookie or, like, chocolate flavors did anything for me. I kind of just like the fruit one. And even then, it's like, man, you're eating a lot of bullshit just to get to the little bit of, like, jam that's
there.
That's
what I always thought. They were so dry. I was like, 90% of this is dry.
Well, now and we're then just shitting like on Pop-Tarts. We're supposed to be talking about rivalries. Toaster strudels were
also
dope,
maybe
though.
I should say they're an American person saying, because I actually think black people do like Pop-Tarts. So.
Oh, we gotta try this out. We gotta see.
Yeah. We gotta figure this out.
The toaster strudels... The icing was fun, but also their savory game was kind of crazy. Like, their sausage, egg, and cheese, like, toaster scramble things were kind of lit. Ooh. I was definitely into those in, like, high school and middle school.
Android, iOS, I feel like there's a lot of opinions there. That's a real battle of the brands.
Mm-hmm. You get really mad when people text you with a green text box, right?
No, I'm not one of those. I
think you're specifically anti, yeah.
Yeah, I had an Android for a while.
Did you like how fewer buttons you had to press to do things or whatever the argument they make is?
No, it really didn't feel any different. And I felt like I was annoying people with the green text. So I moved away after a 2-year trial. Yeah, I think I did it from like 2017 to like 2019 with the Pixel 2.
Mm.
Yeah. And I was like, you know what? I'm not enjoying this enough to make it worth annoying other people. I'll just move to iPhone.
Interesting. And when it came to the Xbox PS5, is there a reason why you got so on PS5's team that you had to have four of them things, or?
No, I was always an Xbox kid. I would consider that the one I was more brand loyal to.
Okay.
Because when I first got off of GameCube, I got an Xbox 360 when that was like Xbox versus PlayStation 3.
And what's the newest Xbox that's competing with the PS5? What are they on now?
Oh, you know, Xbox One. But now I think it's just I can't remember. I think the Xbox One might have been the last one, and I don't know what it's called now. It might just be the Xbox. They might have stopped trying to number them or something. I don't know.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I feel like I haven't heard of a new one of those things come out in forever. I don't know. I was a Nintendo boy, so I didn't really have any stake in this rivalry.
Yeah, yeah.
But I had a lot. Actually, I have a lot of strong opinions about the controller design. I have a lot of opinions about which games are available for which ones. About which one has a better online experience.
I mean, that was a big part of it, because it really did bifurcate who you could play online with. Like, like if you were playing Halo with your friends. Yeah.
Yeah, that is funny.
Now, the nice thing about Fortnite, which is what we play, is that you can play, it's cross.
You can play that on anything. They let anybody in there.
But back in the day, you couldn't even play Call of Duty between, like, even if it was the same game, you couldn't play between consoles. You were playing Xbox friends.
It feels like they were kind of making this into more of a rivalry than it needed to be.
I know, those sons of bitches.
Well, they were trying to divide you guys to conquer.
But also, the exclusives were a big thing, like Halo. Like, you couldn't play that at all on PlayStation, but PlayStation, I think, was a more powerful system, like, had better computing.
Coke and Pepsi? Do we have a strong sense of North Carolina versus Georgia? We're stuck in the middle.
It's tough, man. Although I feel like Coke reps Georgia way more than Pepsi reps North Carolina.
You don't see all the ad boys that are like born in the Carolinas? I guess you haven't been to South Carolina or North Carolina in a while, but
I don't know. I just feel like Atlanta is so much more bound to the idea of like we're the birthplace of Coca-Cola. What city is Pepsi HQ in?
Oh, I have no idea, but somewhere in North Carolina, I presume. That one also has a little bit of a Big Brother, Little Brother. I don't know what the actual like numbers are, but like McDonald's and Burger King, where one clearly seems like the bigger one.
Although Pepsi has the benefit of being PepsiCo, which owns a lot more stuff. But I think Coke is clearly the more like is the Big Brother in the soda game.
I mean, Pepsi's the one that makes Dr. Pepper.
Is they utilize this thing where they purposefully like sell themselves as like a lifestyle to the audience who likes them. Obviously, Pepsi is like, ooh, you're young, brash, and hip. And Coke is like, you're classic. You're just like an old soul.
Is that what they do?
For sure.
Coke, I thought they say that you're Santa Claus with a polar bear or something.
Yeah, exactly. But Americana. Like, that's like, oh, classic. American values. Santa. Christmas. Family. Pepsi is like, we're protesting. We're young. We're hippies.
Oh, I guess I forgot that was one of their big ad campaigns. That's funny.
They have, like, hip-hop artists in their ads, and they're a little like, they're a little bit more modern.
Pepsi does not make me feel young when I drink it. But then again, I rarely ever drink Diet Pepsi. It's much more inferior than Coke Zero.
And I think you'd be right to feel that way. I think these are advertising campaigns. I don't think it actually either of those identities really leads into the flavor.
If Kylie Jenner handed me a Pepsi, I probably wouldn't stop a riot anymore.
Mm. And then Xbox, that's for your like Doritos-fueled Baja Blast gamers, you know? That's for your young gunners. PlayStation is for, I also
guys
want it for the
30s.
Nice Blu-ray player, yeah. And I want to play MLB The Show. I don't know why. FIFA, more appropriate on a PlayStation. But, you know,
that makes sense.
Yeah, that's just how it is.
What are the other big rivalries? Some of it's just regional, right? Like, it's not even a rivalry, like Regal versus Cinemark, or what are the big like movie theaters?
AMC. Yeah, I don't feel like they even brand themselves different, because it's just like, I don't think they want to have a different brand identity. It's just what they're playing at those theaters. Although I will say AMC, I don't know if they've tried to convince me of this, but I am convinced that they have the nicer, more comfortable seating. So that's just, you know, through my own observations.
Okay. How are you feeling about like a Denny's IHOP?
Ooh, I think I didn't go to Denny's as much, so I'm just more an IHOP person.
Yeah, I think it has more staying power, and I think there are more of them around. They always feel closer than a Denny's. Denny's feels like a trek.
And then if you're in the South, you also have the Nintendo of that, which is the Waffle House.
Oh, yep. And I am a third party person a lot of times.
Yeah.
That's definitely my choice if it's there. And then there's also the things where, like, we were talking before about, like, McDonald's obviously being bigger than Burger King. And, like, what is it? Like, Subway and Starbucks now eclipse both of them? Like, they're definitely bigger fish in the game for a lot of these things.
Well, Subway has more stores. I don't know if they have more sales than McDonald's.
I don't think they have more sales, but I don't know, man. Footlongs are like $17 now. They only got to sell like one of those to every one of like 15 McDonald's burgers.
Do you think somebody in the boardroom has pitched that? $5 million
sub.
What if
we just have to sell one? If we make each sub $1 million.
And then obviously iOS is versus Android. Android's like, oh, I know tech and I care about the performance of my phone, versus iOS just the default.
Are we separating that completely from Mac versus PC, or is that also just encapsulated in that?
Yeah, I feel like it's similar energies.
Are you a John Hodgman or are you a Justin Long? A cool, hip Justin Long.
I'm a John Hodgman.
Me too.
Yeah.
Wait, no. Was he Mac or was he PC in that one? He was the PC, right?
Yeah. Oh, Justin Long was a young, hip guy.
Oh, that means I'm Justin Long. Oh, yeah. Dang. Oh, damn.
Isn't it awesome that when they ran that campaign in the UK, they got Mitchell and Webb to do it?
That is cool.
That's such a perfect analog.
Yeah. Who'd they have in India? They have Vijay Prashad?
Yeah, they had Vijay Prashad and who's the one who's married to Harry Styles?
Wait, who's married to Harry Styles?
Oh, or I might be thinking of the wrong person married to the wrong boy band member.
You thinking about Nick Jonas, who's married to
something
Chopra?
Yeah, no, Priyanka Chopra.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Are you big on that? Are you big on the Omnipod versus T-Slim, the insulin pump wars?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, just out of my relationship with you, I stay close to this.
The Dexcom versus the Freestyle. You big opinions about the Freestyle versus the Dexcom?
Well, you know, the thing about Freestyle is nobody realizes that it's expected that you have lines written. It's about being able to perform them over any beat.
It's about being free of form. Yes.
Yeah. Also, you drinking a Budweiser right now reminds me, I guess there are like the beer type of rivalries.
What's the blue and red of beers?
I guess it's a wider world, but it's like Budweiser is definitely like your, that's the Coke. That's like your classic, your Americana. I'm trying to think what the, maybe like a Modelo. You're a little bit, you're a little bit foreign. You're a little spicy.
Yeah, yeah. It is interesting when like a like white, what are we supposed to say instead of white trash? What's the word? When a low income white person has really strong dedication to a specific cheap beer brand is always a really, that you always know, tickles me.
I think it's more because, you know, I'm not saying this about white trash people or low income whites, as you would put it. But when a person is like a real drinker, they definitely get to the place where they're like, anything else will upset my stomach. I know exactly how this beer sits in my stomach.
I know exactly how many Michelob Ultras I can put down in a night.
I mean, a real drinker's drinker will be like, oh, an IPA is disgusting. Like, I can't drink that at all. Like, I need the lightest beer possible because that's what I've been drinking for the last 30 years.
Come on now.
Yeah.
Need my Natty Lights.
Yeah, Natty Light. That's a real drinker's drinker's beer. Hey, Bud Light.
Shout out Miss Amy.
That's a real, I buy a 24 pack for a weekend drinker's beer.
And then any sports brands that you're loyal to? You got like a Nike Puma thing going on or what? Or is
Ooh, yeah, Adidas? You're right, like Yankees. I mean, maybe it's similar to beers where it's just too wide a world. There are too many mini rivalries to call out one big one like PepsiCo.
Yeah, but that's because Americans are silly and they don't have any history. That's why all of their rivalries are just whoever you just kind of don't like. There are very established ones in soccer that have, like, you know, pretty clear definitions. And
what are your big ones?
You know, my dad just sent me a Facebook reel about this and we were arguing about it. I think number 5 in their list was Milan-Inter, which actually I don't even think that's the biggest rivalry in Italy. I think Inter-Juve is a bigger derby. There was River Plate Boca Juniors, which I think is the biggest rivalry in soccer, but they had it at like number 3. Obviously, Real Madrid Barcelona, if you're an American, is probably going to look like the biggest one in the world. And then Argentina Germany. I think there's probably other countries that hate each other a lot more though than that rivalry specifically. Why that's probably think, one of the ones.
Why do you think Real Madrid Barcelona hangs so heavy over America? Is it just like we care about Spanish soccer so much, or
we care about European soccer? Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a lot of Americans know about Latin American soccer.
Gotcha.
But I mean, literally, Barcelona Real Madrid's called the Clásico, and Boca Juniors River Plate's the Super Clásico. It's like in the name, even there's a thing for it. Although that's another thing where people also get mad at Americans for trying to push something like Dortmund Bayern as like a big rivalry because they're the two biggest teams, and they're like, no, there's no history there. They have other teams that they actually have like rivalries with. They have other teams where their factory workers went on strike against the people who owned the pharmaceutical company that the other team plays for, or whatever, you know, type thing there was.
It's so awesome that it's just like this captures people to that level. Not to sound smug, but yeah, that's just, to go on strike to screw over another soccer team.
I don't know if that's the actual history of these things, but it usually is something to do with class politics. But it's usually just more like rich and poor. But actually, when I was talking about sports, I was bringing up like Nike versus Adidas. I was actually talking about
true.
Teams.
I didn't think about that. Yeah.
That was, I was going to say, again, third option. I was a Puma boy.
Mm.
Now I get whatever is at Goodwill or Ross or whatever.
Yeah, that one's a little bit harder. I don't know exactly what Nike stands for. Adidas was definitely a little bit more hip hop. Yeah, it's hard to know.
Nike seems yuppie to me.
Yeah, but then there's also like the Air Jordans and stuff too. So then it also kind of gets this like fashion or like high, like big spending sort of thing with Nike.
Also, isn't Nike woke? When did the conservatives start burning their Nikes?
Nike is woke. I did not know that.
Yeah. Wasn't there a whole thing about conservatives burning their Nikes?
Oh, okay.
Also, I'm British now, so
British.
I say Nikes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Glad we got past that.
Yeah, I can't even remember what that was about. I'm sure I knew at the time. It seems like a funny thing that they were burning their shoes that they paid for.
I think it's
for.
Normally, it's almost always a reaction to an ad, but I don't know what ad Nike would have done. Maybe they had a spokesperson or something.
It is funny when you look back at these controversies that it's just like, oh, there was a black woman in the ad.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That was that? Okay.
Not in my Nike.
There was an interracial couple in the background of the ad.
Oh, that was Cheerios, right? That's what got them.
Did it? That's
funny. Yeah, get mad about that. There's no breakfast cereal rivalries. Ones we could talk about are...
It's one of those things where I feel like when somebody points it out, you'll be like, oh, yeah, that too. And that we're
missing
some.
Oh, yeah. Inevitably, someone's going to say, hey, why didn't you guys talk about this on the pod? And it's like, you've been a guest on the pod. You know how hard it is to think of things in person. You had issues with it. Why are you being this way?
And also, I guess if you're like very into a certain world, you might be like, oh, I can't believe they didn't bring up Oakley's Ray-Ban, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can't believe they didn't talk about Chronicles of Narnia versus a series of unfortunate events.
For a while, and this is definitely not true anymore, but there was like a little slim amount of time in like maybe the mid-2010s where it felt like Hulu Netflix was a choice. Did you want traditional like sitcoms that were on TV just in a streaming yeah. format, or did you want Netflix's like kind of random ass assortment of stuff?
Right, right, right. Yeah, Hulu, they did the HBO thing. Like, I remember their first ads was Alec Baldwin talking about how they were an alien company creating this new thing that's not TV or whatever. And then they just became a regular streaming service, maybe because they were early on it. But I was going to say really quick, oh, fuck, what was I thinking about before you said that? Oh, shit. Oh, well, I thought about TV show rivalries. We've talked about that before on pod, like your Friends versus your How I Met Your Mothers, where I feel like they're in different classes, but people tried to make that like an argument.
Yeah, that's craziness. Like, Friends is so much better in every way.
Dude, I was ganged up on by like four other people who disagreed with me, and I was like, I don't know how to tell all of you that you're all dumb and stupid.
And I hate all of you. So wrong, and honestly a bit of a troglodyte and moron to think that right, How I Met Your Mother has anything on Friends.
Yeah, basic. You're a troglodyte. You got big Crest Colgate opinions, or are you an Aquafresh guy?
You know, I never thought about it, but I do. That is one of those like subconscious things where they got me, but I think I do just go for the Crest.
That's another one where, well, you know what? I should have loyalty because I think one of my cousins in Guatemala works in the Crest factory, but I think I go for whichever one's cheaper.
Yeah. Are you a Moe's or are you a Chipotle?
We don't have Moe's over here.
Oh.
It's regional. Yeah, I think there were two in Sacramento that closed down. I actually looked this up recently because Phil was asking me about this. So they were here at some point, and then the closest one's now in LA. I would obviously choose Chipotle, but also I kind of have this
Chipotle
like...
Chipotle has gotten a lot worse. I think that's one where
really?
They have... Moe's hasn't gotten better, but Chipotle's gotten so much worse that Moe's became better.
Yeah, I mean, I was already talking about how burritos are like a almost never food for me, so I just don't really go to Chipotle that often. The chips are good, though.
Well, you can always get a salad bowl, too, at these places.
What, I'm paying $12 for a salad bowl? What am I doing?
What am I doing?
Oh, fuck. I had one that I was really interested in talking about. But yeah, maybe we should just go to a column. Maybe I'll think about it later.
All right. Do you want to go first or second?
I can go first. So mine is from Ask a Manager. Work trainers are pushing us to share race, religion, sexuality, and gender identity. Because what's more Coke versus Pepsi than, you know, God versus Allah or whatever? So that's my justification.
Also, have we realized recently that Ask a Manager has a question on everything? As soon as I can't find a question about something, I'm like, I just need to go to Ask a Manager's archives.
She has bad SEO, but yeah, she does kind of have everything. Just to get like some solid answers on your choices in some of these matters, can we do a really quick fire round? Coke or Pepsi?
Coke.
Mac or PC?
PC.
Israel, Palestine?
Palestine.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Just checking.
What was even the first one?
All right. Mamdani or Cuomo?
Come on. Don't make me... You're going to ask me which kid I love more?
Oh, yeah. Hassan Piker or his dog?
Come on. You can't make choose between the devil and Hitler.
All right. I keep finding myself in this weird situation at work. I'm a medical resident in an academic hospital system in a big progressive city. I keep finding myself in mandatory... Oh, what about Uber Lyft? Anyways, all right. Now I'm starting to think of ones that I didn't think about before. I keep finding myself in mandatory educational events where the facilitator introduces the concept of privilege as if no one's ever heard of it. and invites slash demands everyone to share their privilege slash lack thereof. Real examples. Let's all reflect on our positionality and then go around the room. I'm Dr. Last Name. As you know, I'm the head of this department. I'm the child of South Asian immigrants, and I am able-bodied. I live with my wife and children. Your turn. And I invite you to turn to your colleagues, preferably someone you don't know, and introduce yourself in a way you never have before, considering some of the identities in the Wheel of Privilege. I was in the same room as everyone else in my small program, my program director, and six other attending physicians who regularly evaluate me. It feels seemingly obvious to me that this was inappropriate. Are we supposed to out ourselves? Are we supposed to out each other? Is this a therapy session that no one consented to? It's like there's this shared nonsensical belief that just because we're all progressive, that makes this a safe space, and suddenly it's no longer harassment to demand information about your colleague's sexuality, religion, or gender identity. Again, the real Coke and Pepsis of the world. Please, please tell me there are... Oh, we forgot to talk about pussy and bussy. Please, please tell me there are magic words to get this to stop. So far, I've tried saying things like, thank you, this is important, this is so important to reflect on, and this certainly isn't the first time it's come up. My name is Name, and I'm a fifth-year resident here at East University. I studied basket weaving at North University and did my medical school at West University, which results in awkward silence, but at least then my peers feel empowered to do the same instead of introducing themselves as a collection of privileges and marginalizations. I've also tried, you know, I'm reflecting on what's appropriate to share with colleagues and the importance of appropriate boundaries. Both have resulted in the disappointment from the facilitator and further boundary pushing. Help.
When was this posted? 2025? Come on now. I thought woke was dead. I thought this was the type of annoying shit we all decided was weird and obnoxious in 2018. And oh my gosh, this is the type of thing that killed woke, right?
You know, you keep saying this. Isn't that a big part of the new season of South Park, is that Cartman's mad that woke is dead and that everyone's acting like he is, so he can't be like, he can't stand out anymore? Isn't that like a big part of the new season?
Is it? That's funny.
Yeah.
And this is one of those things where it's like, it seems like somebody who just learned about privilege asserting its importance to the point where they're somehow not realizing how uncomfortable they're making other people by demanding that they talk about their identity in their workplace. And it's like, that's the type of thing that reifies privilege, to demand that unprivileged people are your little like monkeys who should cry for you about how tough their life has been. Like, leave people alone. Let them work. Let them live.
Let them work, let them live. Well, Wheel of Privilege, having work, being able to live.
We tackle these things systematically, not by making individuals uncomfortable on a person-to-person basis.
You don't think it helps you relate to your fellow physicians?
No. Have you ever had one of these weird work?
You know, the closest thing was when I was co-teaching a class with another instructor, and she did the thing where she started her first lecture by being like, here's who I am. I identify as queer, which I think is important to tell my students. And I was like, I'm not going to tell my students anything about me. So like, I immediately was like, am I supposed to have that in my slides? And then I ultimately decided, no, I'm not going to tell my students about me like that.
Let's put it all on the table, Adrian. Where do we sit on the Wheel of Privilege?
Well, I drive to work. I know that's in the center of privilege. I live in the Imperial Corps, where much of my lifestyle is funded by the misery of people in the Global South.
Couldn't be me.
I do have a PhD, which I found out recently before I picked this column, but it's funny that I did pick this column. That is a big point of privilege that gives me safety nets that aren't afforded to other people. And I'm able-bodied for the most part. I would say able-bodied, yaddy, 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 yaddy. Oh, and I had two parents growing up. I think that's part of the Wheel of Privilege. I forgot about that. I don't know. Yeah, what about you?
I'm a 13th century Mongolian peasant.
Oh.
Yeah. Not part of any Mongol armies, just working day to day, you know, doing Mongol stuff.
You're allowed to say that because you're, I don't know if that sounds a little weird though.
Just doing normal Mongol stuff. I'm not part of the armies.
Okay.
I'm hunting with my hawk.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah.
And a spear? You're doing some spear fishing with like a cormorant?
Is that something they do? That's cool. What a cool culture. Is that an accessible place for tourism?
I only know people who have gone there to do research, but it doesn't seem like it's that hard to get to.
Okay. Big facts, no cap abroad?
Yeah, that'd be fun. Go to Mongolia.
But okay, yeah. So we figured out our Wheel of Privileges.
Oh, okay. So we're done with that. Which is something you said you didn't like doing, and it's interesting that you decided for us to do that together on pod and do that so sincerely.
I think the big one that nobody really acknowledges is that we're American. And like you said about the Imperial Corps, what a leg up on life.
I mean, we are here during the downfall and crumbling of the Empire, but that's kind of, you know.
Yeah, but that always happens across like a century. We still have plenty of time, number one.
That's true. Number one.
Yeah, we get to watch some democratic norms be destroyed. Oh, no. While we still live it up, maybe don't try to build generational wealth here right now.
Are you going to say anything about your working pancreas?
Oh, yeah. But also, my eyesight's bad.
My eyesight. We're both wearing glasses.
I'm bald. Me trying to make myself sound less privileged.
You look good in hats. I don't look good in hats. I assume in the tech world, you don't have to deal with any of this bullshit.
No.
Or are they trying to add any of this to it?
No, I mean, nothing bad, because the only...
I know you told me that you had the boss who tried to pry into your opinions too much.
Yeah, I had a boss who really wanted to know my opinion on Israel-Palestine.
And you gave it up for free on the pod.
I know. And he kept wanting to have, like, some nuanced talk about it. And I did what this person did, which is, like, I tried to be so professional. I was like, oh, I don't think it's appropriate to talk about politics at work. That was my mantra. I said it to him, like, 20 times. I was like, how is this man still asking me? That's craziness.
All right. So any advice for this question asker besides, I guess, just doing what she's doing? Is she looking for advice, or is she just looking for validation that this isn't okay for your workplace to do? Because, like, I actually don't know what the rules are for whether or not you can do this at a workplace. It kind of seems like something that certain well-meaning people would try to do.
If somebody brought it up at work, I legitimately would feel like, unless this was like a opt-in group to talk about this stuff, which then is perfectly fine, because it's like you're opting in to talk with other people who also want to talk about their identity and how it affects their work. But to be forced to do it, like, I see why it makes people uncomfortable. I don't want to give up my politics or my identity to people who might be adversarial to that.
Mm-hmm.
It is uncomfortable. I feel where they're coming from.
I don't know. I do like the idea that she's going to be using this information against people, or that she's worried that that's what's going to happen, I guess. I don't know.
Heck, it's not even that you think it's going to be so explicit, like they're going to target you. It's just that, like, it can make somebody stereotype you. You know?
Well, I was going to say that that actually did happen once, where one of the guys that I knew got into like an argument or some kind of bad blood with one of his collaborators. And one of the things they did is they outed him to his field team, which he worked in Africa. And so it was actually a big deal where they like weren't going to let him come back and work anymore because he was gay, which was insane.
Whoa, who outed him? A field operator?
Someone who worked in his team, so some other scientist or whatever.
Wow, that is so disgusting. I feel like that's the type of thing where you should have recourse with, like, that person's university in America. Like, you should be allowed to be like, that person cannot work abroad if that's how they're going to weaponize other people's governments.
Yeah, yeah. But other than that, like, in what U.S., like, Western workplaces I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how often stuff like that is happening to people who, like, work at a tech firm.
Well, you said you didn't want to tell your students you were queer. You think you're going into the office and you're joining, like, the queer ERG day one?
EOG?
ERG, Employee Resource Group. That's, like, the opt-in thing I was talking about, where it's, like, if you want to talk about being queer at work, I think that's fine. I just think it should be an opt-in. Like, you join an ERG or you...
Interesting. Is that like is that the equivalent of like a student club at a university is?
Yeah.
Like they have that at work?
Yeah.
Can I do the rock climbing one? Can I do like the outdoorsy one?
I mean, I think a lot of it's also networking for people who you want to like mentor or mentee. So it's like you can join the Latino ERG if you want to meet other Latinos to mentor or be mentored by.
I want to go to the one with baddies in it. How do I do that?
Adrian, you should not be looking to date in your workplace, man. How many times do I have to tell you
that's
this?
That's the number one place where people find love. The whole reason I joined this corporation was to find my Pam, or my Jim, or my Stanley. All right, yeah, do you want to hear the answer?
Yeah, let's hear what they have to say.
All right, let's see what they have to say about this Pepsi versus Coke question.
Oh, was the concept that it's because it's like it defines your personality if you're a Pepsi or Coke person? Is that what they were going to ask this person next? Are you queer? What privileges do you have? Do you like Pepsi or Coke? What sort of person are you? Okay.
Well, I was saying that God versus Allah was the ultimate Coke versus Pepsi. So when you say what your religion is.
Allah is just the Arabic word for God, Adrian. I don't know how many times I have to tell you that.
I know. My sixth grade teacher got asked this question and responded about it. Yeah, this is inappropriately invasive. I get that they're trying to get you to reflect on areas of privilege or potential lack of privilege and to consider how different aspects of a person's identity can intersect to create a more complex experience. But there are ways to do that that don't push people to share information they may not be comfortable sharing in a work setting. Your trainers might argue that you only need to share things that you're comfortable with, but given the way they respond when you attempt to do that, that doesn't seem to be true. You could try saying this. I appreciate the point that's being made about intersectionality, and I also think it's important that people not be pushed to out themselves in ways they'd prefer not to, particularly in a professional context. So I'm going to stick with the things you can see about me and a few other basics, and hope that gives other people permission to do the same if they choose to. Yeah, what a script. But I would also push back hard on this in course evaluations if they do them, and possibly to whoever coordinates these trainings to begin with. Point out that demanding this kind of sharing will put people, particularly people with marginalized identities, in a position of vulnerability and risks opening them up to discrimination, an outcome that's presumably directly the opposite of these sessions' goals, and that no one should feel pressured into unwanted exposure at a work training. That was it.
Nice. That wasn't too bad.
Yeah, about as good as you could have, done. I didn't love the script, but it was actually a very competent thing to say. Yeah, the mean reviews thing, sure, I guess so.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like what I was saying about, I don't think this is appropriate to talk about at work. I think you have to have, like, a very standard, easy to understand script with something like this, so people understand that you're not ad hocking, that you've thought about it and you're trying to make a point. So they go, oh, okay, fair enough. That is weird that I would demand to know their identity. I'll move on to the next person.
Yeah. And I think saying it in the way of, like, I'm doing this so that other people who are uncomfortable can feel the same way is probably going to get the message across pretty well.
Yeah. I think that's good. And I agree with Ask a Manager that it does feel invasive, and I personally would not like it.
All right.
Yeah, so I sent you an advice column. I don't think we have done Asking for a Friend before. Maybe it just wasn't on self.com. But this is Miriam Kermayer's PhD's advice column from November 3rd of this year. Get right into it. Dear Dr. Miriam, years ago, I had a bad falling out with a former...
And what's her doctorate in? Psychologist, okay.
Hopefully clinical.
So she has a fake doctorate.
Clinical psychologist. No, real.
Oh, okay.
I feel like I should specify to the audience, I don't actually think research psychology is all fake.
I don't know.
Dear Dr. Miriam, years ago, I had a bad falling out with a former friend from high school. At a recent reunion, I found out that she's telling almost everyone our personal business while leaving out key details, especially the stuff she did to me. What's worse, she's sharing this one-sided and false narrative with people she's not even close to. It really bothers me that people might have an inaccurate perception of me, and I'm not sure what to do. Should I correct everyone and share the full story, even though it feels private, be the bigger person, and stay silent even though that seems unfair for me, or do I confront her directly? And if so, what's the best way to do that when I know she strongly dislikes me and likely won't empathize?
So one person is Coke and one person's Pepsi?
It's a rivalry. And they're trying to brand you with marketing.
Okay, yeah, sure. It's about as good as mine. Why do you care what the people from high school think about you?
You know, they didn't say this, but I assume they still live in the same town. So it's not... I would assume the worry is that generally people you might encounter would have an unfair idea about you.
Do you ever worry about that? Do you have any enemies in these streets?
Although she did say at a recent reunion, which does make it seem like it might be limited to high school, in which case, yeah, who cares?
Yeah.
You said, do I have enemies in these streets?
Because Dorley was telling me about that the other day. She was like, I was at a party and two of my ops were there. And I was like, what ops do you have out in Portland?
I've heard that an ex was saying bad stuff about me.
But that was all true.
Hey. No.
She did that diss track where she released the backwards audio of Richard Pryor saying everything they're saying about me is true. You know, this just happened today where I was talking to a friend. We left career center office hours together, and he was walking me to my car. And he was like, yeah, I've been applying to work in this building because it's so close to where I live. My only issue is that one of my exes works here, and if I saw her, it'd probably be like a big deal. And I was like, damn, that's crazy. I don't have it like that kind of experience or relationship with any of my exes. I don't talk to any of them, but like I could work in the same building as any of them. But it's interesting when you hear people say stuff like that, because he's such a nice guy. It makes you wonder, like, is this other person insane, or is this person just more insane than they're letting on in the way that we interact?
People can be weird in relationships, right? There's people who can be normal as friends, but they're odd in relationships.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
How about outside of relationships? Has it come back to you that anybody's ever saying Adrian's trash?
Just the one lady that I beef with at the research center, which I'm not going to lie, I still have a slight inkling that that might be the reason I didn't get that job at UCANR. I think they might have asked around about me.
So these things can affect you.
Not trying to be cocky, but like, I think that might have been it. And then other than that, I know that because of a breakup that happened, that there's a group of people who, some of them don't like me. I think some of them have come around though. Like, I've worked with some of them one-on-one, and like, as soon as we did that together, they're like, oh, Adrian seems a lot more chill than the way people talk about him, so I think he's okay with me now.
Oh, what do you mean? Like, you took the side of one person in the relationship, and they were like, oh, Adrian's outside of the group now?
Yeah, and I think it was... Okay, here's the thing. I took the man's side because I was closer with him. Almost certainly he wasn't in the right. I don't know. I just don't really care, and I didn't particularly care for his girlfriend that much. But the people who are friends with his girlfriend, who are all kind of like in a group together, I think were like, yeah, we don't like Adrian now.
Yeah, that is tough, especially with like... And it kind of gets back to this question when it's like hearsay in a group of friends, and then people are asking you to untangle who was in the right or wrong in the breakup or like in the situation. Yeah. It's like, I'm not an investigator. I don't feel like it's my job. I just want to be friends with the person I like. I don't know if I need to figure out if they really were emotionally distant.
Oh, yeah. When you get those kind of allegations. Also, there's the kind of thing where like the idea of like, omitting things, so like even if they're doing this weird thing where they're trying to stay truthful but they're leaving out parts of it is always very frustrating.
Yeah,
it's as frustrating as just outright lying about things at that point, just make stuff up.
I did hear about this in a friend group recently where, man, this is hard because you have to keep it vague since our friends all listen to this podcast.
That's what I was doing. Yeah,
it was like a random person who nobody knew talking to a person in the friend group and being like, this other person in the friend group, I knew them from way back when, and they actually did something shady back then. And it's like,
that's
too much. I don't like that. And now we all have to, what, we're going to be little investigators about it. I don't care. You know what?
That was,
that's hearsay. That's bullshit.
That was an interesting thing where two people who I knew from completely different contexts were at a party together. They knew each other. They knew each other from they both lived in the same city before. And they did not like each other. And when I asked one of the people, actually, I asked the one who I was less close to, which maybe wasn't the way to go. But yeah, I asked her, I was like, so wait, what's up with you and that other person? And she was like, you know, sometimes people don't get along. And I was like, damn, that is a diplomatic and a haunting answer.
You know, people don't get along when one person is an abusive, toxic piece of shit.
Yeah.
And it's exactly, not me, to be clear.
To be clear. Well, what about the other side of it? Who have you spread terrible rumors about?
Oh.
Or truths. Technically, part of this was just omission, not lies.
I would like to think that unless I'm venting to friends, I'm not that petty.
I don't know. I am the kind of person who will just straight up say like, oh yeah, I don't like that person.
And has that ever come back to haunt you? Has the person confronted you and been like, hey Adrian, I heard you're talking shit?
No, never confronted me about it. But also other people who I've said that about, I don't know. It's interesting because I want to say like most people know where they stand, but I don't, sometimes I just kind of hate people randomly.
Yeah.
Either that or I have like a weirdly specific reason why I don't like a person.
Yeah, you do have that Seinfeld-esque tilt to you. It was like they ate their peas one at a time.
And then let's see, messy breakups, the other ones that I've been involved in. Yeah, not that many. None that I can really think of where I stayed friends with both sides or anything like that.
You got to pick in the divorce. Oh, I guess I have been friends with two sides of a breakup after the breakup, and it was...
Have you ever thought that you were supposed to be mad at one of them, and then we see them again and they're really nice to you and you realize that you're not supposed to be mad at them?
No, I don't think that's happened.
Oh, that happened with Patrick's ex, Stacy. I saw her senior year of college and she like waved at me and smiled at me and I was like, oh, I don't know why I thought we were beefing. I guess we're good. All right, what's up, dog?
Have you ever heard somebody start talking shit about somebody that you're close with and you're like, eh, I don't need to hear it?
Yeah, yeah. I think I told you about that recently when I was talking to Franklin at a party and I mentioned one of my friends that he used to live with and he was like, oh, she's a bitch. And I was like, oh, I don't know what's going on between you guys. I don't care. I don't want to hear about this.
I've done that too. I do shut it down when people want to talk shit sometimes because I'm like, you know, I like that person and it feels like it's personal and I don't think I'm going to get the honest truth of it. So I just don't even want to know the info.
And that's when you took out the ukulele and you started singing about the toxic gossip train?
Yeah. Oh. But you won't believe this, Adrian. This one YouTuber stole my song.
They plagiarized on YouTube? Are you allowed to do that?
You can vouch for this. I've been singing Toxic Gossip Train since high school.
For years.
Yeah.
Like decades.
I came up with that song when we were wee lads.
You know it by heart. You can sing it right now.
Toxic Gossip Train.
See, that's perfect.
Well, I don't have my ukulele. You know I can't get into the rhythm if I'm not strong.
You got the old uke. Yeah, I don't know. What should this person do?
I didn't read it like this at first, but once you pointed it out, it does feel like it's just a high school thing, so I would forget it. Just let this wound, it'll heal over time. This doesn't need to be solved unless you're in a really small community where you're going to run into these high school people again.
Have you ever, I guess we can go straight into what the question's asking, but have you ever found out that you were wrong about somebody because you didn't get the full story about something that went on?
I've definitely heard both sides of a breakup and been like, yeah, you guys are saying very different things. Usually I just decide in my mind who's right. But it doesn't really affect things. I don't know. Like I said, because I think people can act weird in like relationships in a way they wouldn't act in other situations, I just kind of chalk it up to like, oh, that's their relationship mind. That's their shit they're dealing with in the relationship. It doesn't really affect my friendship with them. It's not like it's allegations of abuse or anything. It's just allegations of shitty behavior.
What about gaslighting?
Yeah, some allegations of gaslighting.
Ooh. What about love bombing?
I've heard some allegations of love bombing.
There's some pretty rough stuff we're talking about now.
Love bombing?
And you're the Arab
of
the podcast.
If we had more love bombs and less explosive bombs, the world would be a better place, Adrian. I think there's a better type of bomb here.
Any accusations of someone trying to make the relationship poly against the other person's will?
No, not yet, sadly.
I had one of those.
Really?
Yeah. That was the other thing I was going to say is that I do have friends where I see them like on a more month-to-month basis, and then also they tend to move around in relationships a lot, where I get caught in the situation of being like, oh, how's that person doing? And they're like, oh, we're not really talking anymore. And it's like, oh, okay, cool, got it.
Yeah, the person that you can't ask how a relationship's going because you just have to assume that they're...
Yeah, on to the next.
On to the next.
Mm-hmm. And you know I'm not trying to talk or shit, got onto the toxic gossip train.
And it is weird because it's like the option is there to just be casual, but there are the people who are like chronic monogamous.
Oh, no, it always ends messy.
You know
she
what I mean?
Messy.
The person who refuses to keep it casual, so it is always we're girlfriend boyfriend, we're in a relationship, and then it ends really quickly. And it's like you could just change your ways and to just make it casual so that it doesn't have to be this whole thing.
And now we're knee deep in the passenger seat and an enemy is a casual now. Do you want to hear the answer though from Miriam?
Let's hear what Miriam has to say. Reunited and it feels not good. Two words have recently made their way into taken over the cultural conversation about unmet expectations and relationship challenges. Let them. I want to introduce two more. So what? I don't ask this flippantly or rhetorically, but seriously. So what if your former friend is rehashing details about the past and your connection? So what if someone has an incorrect or incomplete understanding of the situation? What consequences are you specifically concerned about? Maybe you're worried that people will judge you. So what? Or that they won't believe you. So what? Or that they'll choose her side. So what? At the end of this train of inquiry, you might learn that you're afraid of losing people close to you, or that your reputation will be irreversibly damaged, or maybe you fear that it will confirm a core belief that I'm unlovable, or no one likes me, or the world is an unsafe place. This "so what" exercise isn't meant to minimize your fears, but to reveal them, so you can gauge your likelihood and choose how the "today you" wants to respond. Reunions have a way of reconnecting us not only with people from our past, but with past versions of ourselves. Without even realizing it, we can regress into prior roles and relationship dynamics. Is it possible that your fears are actually echoes of the past, as opposed to present threats? To put it plainly, your high school self might find this downright dreadful and be preoccupied with what people are thinking, but does your current self need to? In the same way you'd like your ex-friend to leave your personal business in the past, are there unhelpful beliefs you too can leave behind? Social anxiety can lead us to overestimate the chance of the worst-case scenario coming true. What's more, social media can heighten our experience of feeling judged. The key to reframing our anxious predictions, though, is to question their accuracy. How realistic is this fear? Maybe your peers won't care or even believe her. Maybe this former friend's blabbing will actually lead them to make assumptions about her character. Next, question the helpfulness of your thoughts. How might your what-if anxieties be getting in the way of your current relationship or well-being? And what if you tried asking a more helpful question? What if things work out better than I anticipate? So what do you want to do? The way you framed it, it sounds like there's a tension between your two options. One, correct everyone, or two, stay silent. Do you really need or want to correct everyone, or are there a few key people you'd like to reach out to? Do you need to share your entire version of events, or can you narrow it down to a few important details? You could also keep it broad. I'm not comfortable going into specifics about our past, but it's important to me that you know there's more to the story, and it's tough for me that it isn't being acknowledged or heard. You can keep your discussion from turning into a vent session or even a trial about past recollections. I suggest you get clear on your present why. Why are you motivated to tell them this information now? Don't only think about this, lead with it. Try to avoid tying your why to assumptions about them. Give them the benefit of the doubt, for their sake and yours. You are also wondering about speaking directly with your former friend. Before you do that, ask yourself, what kind of exchange are you open to having? Are you interested in gaining clarity on what's been said, or perhaps even working towards a resolution? Or are you looking to communicate a clear boundary? If relevant, you can be specific about what your requests are. For example, I'm not comfortable with you speaking about leaving out a certain specific part of our history, bringing this up in a group or public setting, sharing this with a mutual friend. Please know if this continues, it's important to me to share my side of the story as well. The clearer your limits and requests are, the easier it is to build mutual understanding and clarify your perceived transgressions. Fair warning, though, it's possible that, depending on the person, the details of your message might too become public domain. Just as you're working to manage the public narrative, I also encourage you to protect your well-being. Will having these conversations lead to change or even bring you closer to your friends who do support you? Maybe. Might it also keep you from connecting meaningfully with the important people who are a part of your present? It's possible. Be mindful of how much energy you spend stressing about, rehashing, and managing this fallout. Equally important, make sure you're reaching out to people you trust and care about more often for the sake of meeting your need for connection, not correcting a misperception.
That was a lot longer than I thought it was going to be at first.
Also, it wasn't talking at all about juicy gossip.
Also, I'm sad we can't play music anymore because I really wanted to put Vince Staples' "So What" at the end of this after that first part.
They do that thing where it almost felt like they wanted to write that article anyway, and this was a good jumping off point, which I guess makes sense for a PhD. She's taken a more, like, actually helpful to the readership approach to advice columns.
Yeah.
I think I like the more specific, obviously, like, the Slate style where it's, like, a really absurd thing, and you dive into the specifics of that interaction. That's more juicy. But it was all good advice.
Yeah, it was all fine. She's a friendship expert. Interesting.
How good are her friendships? How do you get
her
that
research,
title?
Her research is on the science of friendship.
Is she one of those people that's like monkeys only have like 10 people they know, so humans can only have 10 friends?
That's her research, probably. She's like, what about the monkey?
The monkey only have 10 people in their community, so that's about how many friends you can have.
All right, do you want to get into a third seggy?
Yeah, let's do it.
Sometimes when it comes to the Coke and Pepsi and the third brand has to be made by a conservative grifter, and that's what we're going to cover in this third segment. Paul and Adrian are going to rank the marketing and ideas behind conservative alternatives to major brands. This is a article from Forbes. Conservative brands, including beer, chocolate, and razors, and more, are trying to profit on anti-woke backlash. So here are the key bullet points. We can go through these. The first one is Seth Weathers launched Conservative Dad's Ultra Right Beer in April in response to Bud Light's brief marketing partnership with trans social media influencer Dylan Mulvaney, and it's set to hit shelves in stores and restaurants across the South in the coming weeks. I had never heard of this one, but I know a lot of the people with like guns shooting packs of Bud Light. That was cool.
Oh, I remember when this was a thing, and the problem was that like he started taking pre-orders, and then it turned out like they had no company to actually brew it set up, and it seemed like very hard.
I feel
to...
like I kind of vaguely remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. This seems like the type of thing that has to be failing, right? I went on their website.
What I don't understand is, like, isn't there Yingling? Isn't there already conservative beer? Like, what did this guy add to it?
The fact that he's the one who gets to make the money? I don't know.
Yeah.
It was $40 for 24 packs. I mean, you're saving so much money, and it's sold out. You can't even buy it.
Oh, man, we should have bought some.
I know.
This is something that Phil and I always talk about is, like, I remember when they said that they were going to stop making the Travis Scott agave seltzer. I bought like a 12 pack on my way home, stored it for a little bit, and was like, you know what? This isn't going to be worth anything. I'm just going to drink these.
You thought it was going to be worth something. You were like, ooh, in 50
I think
years.
I was on the drive home, and Phil was like, yo, we got to get a 12 pack and just put it aside, man. This could be worth a lot one day. I was like, you know what? Let's scheme, brother. Let's do it.
I don't think you should be taking investment advice from Phil. I like how
Phil is my banker. He's my banking guy. He has a degree in accounting.
He convinced you on Beanie Babies so quickly. You were like, this is the future.
Those are expensive. What do you mean? That's a good idea.
Well, you drank those Travis Scott seltzers, so.
I did. They're not even that good. The agave sweetening was kind of weird.
Can you imagine after 50 years in your closet, what would have happened?
No. They were in my parents' mini fridge.
This one almost seemed more like a scam than an actual brand attempt.
Well, I think all of these are kind of, I guess, yeah, whatever.
Some of them are a little longer lasting. Like you can.
Have you ever like gone to Walmart and seen that like garage beer brand?
No.
It doesn't scream right wing to me, but it is weird. Like I don't really understand what that brand is about. I get it. It's supposed to be, you know, this is just the beer you have in your garage for when you're working on a Saturday doing a project. But something about it felt weirdly coded. All right. Do you want to read the next one?
Yeah. Jeremy Boring, CEO of conservative outlet The Daily Wire, founded Jeremy's Chocolates earlier this year after Hershey's included a trans woman in an International Women's Day ad, and Boring claims he sold 500,000 bars, which come in he-him flavor with nuts and she-her flavor without, within a day of launch. By the way, this was from 2023 before The Daily Wire went bankrupt, so I'm doubting how successful this
could
was.
Could have just leaned into the job.
Despite his claim that he made massive profits off this asinine venture.
This is the second one in the row where it's a trans woman that caused this?
Yeah. I'm starting to think they don't like some people.
Yeah, and the joke is the one joke that they have. And, I mean, the thing about these products is they don't even have to be good, right? Because the people who are buying them are just buying them to buy them, yeah. Right?
Oh, can you imagine the poor nephew who got this for Christmas that year?
Oh, my God. Yeah, you have to find someone to give it to.
Yeah, you're not going to eat the disgusting chocolate. You got to give it away.
Yeah, the he-him, it's got nuts in it. Get it? Nuts.
Because liberals are nuts. The guy doesn't even understand the joke who bought it.
I don't really get it. I just bought it. I just spent all of my money on it. I spent all of my social security on it.
I mean, if Jeremy Boring comes out with it, I got to get it. Mm. That man has a track record. Have you seen Lady Ballers? That movie is hilarious.
We got a second Boring on the list. He also founded Jeremy's Razors, which is what you were trying to think of on the phone earlier. I forgot about this brand. Jeremy's Razors, which is competing with Harry's Razors, after it pulled advertisements from the Daily Wire after receiving a complaint. Some of its podcast hosts had used hate speech, leading Boring to launch an I Hate Harry's campaign. IHateHarry's.com redirects to Jeremy's Razors.
Wait, so this isn't even that Harry's Razors was woke? They literally just didn't give him money? What is that?
No, no, no. They caved into the woke mob coming after their...
if I was an advertiser, what a signal to me to never advertise with the Daily Wire, that if you pull out, they'll try to launch a competing company and launch a hate campaign towards your product.
Yeah, now you can't find Harry's Razors anywhere, as they got completely outcompeted. Actually, no, Harry's is the brand that I use. I don't know why. I think I did like hear about it on a podcast like a long time ago and just stuck with it. Which, have you ever had that moment in a podcast where they stop advertising for a company and they start making fun of that company that they ever did ads for it?
No.
Oh, there was a podcast that I listened to for a long ass time that finally lost Harry's Razors as a sponsorship. And they were like, God, those razors are not that good. I hate that we had to keep talking about them. And I was like, they worked fine for me. I don't know. Maybe I'm just gaslighting myself into using them. But
I do think razors are pretty specific. It's like, it's whatever works on your skin. And I feel like it can be pretty different for different people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, I think this makes the Daily Wire look like a bunch of, you know, and I've always respected them in the past, so this is a big of me to say, it makes them look like a bunch of weird little whiny bitches.
And, yeah, I mean, I don't normally agree with that kind of gendered language, but you know what? I am okay with this one. But, like, there's no joke or anything to it. They're also not called, like, Jeremy's, like, right-wing razors. They're just his name and razors. It's really lazy.
Hey, Adrian, they didn't go bankrupt because they were marketing geniuses.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. All right, let's see. We've got Sarah. Wait, I read the last one.
Okay, next up, we got Sarah Gonzalez, host of The News and Why It Matters on Blaze TV. Shout out Glenn Beck.
Launch that sounds kind of cool. Wait, is that what Blaze TV is?
Yeah, it's Glenn Beck's streaming channel.
Rad.
The only streaming channel where we weep on every show. Launched cosmetics company American Beauty in opposition to woke makeup brands that use transgender women in advertisements. Some of its patriotic-themed shades include Triggered and American Dream. The one joke thing is so true. How many products have been called Triggered when they're the weird right-wing alternative to products?
And it's a cosmetic. So this one's for the... Oh, this one's for the anti-woke ladies.
Also, horrible SEO. Obviously, the movie's going to come up first if you search American Beauty.
Yeah, it is a good patriotic name. Do you think this is what Blair White uses? What's her name? Who's the trans woman?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, because they won't advertise with her. And much like the Daily Wire, if you don't pay to advertise with her, she's cutting you off.
Do you want to look them up? Are they still going strong?
Like I said, not easy to look up, but let's see. What's her name? Yeah, Sarah. Okay, they still have a website.
What's the price for this?
You can get a lip pencil for $20, a lipstick for $20, another type of lipstick for $20, or a gift card for $10. Their website is really ugly. It looks like cheap, stupid bullshit. Those four products I mentioned are their only products. Yeah, this seems like a gimmick. You know, it doesn't seem like a real makeup startup. Seems like they had four gimmick products that were probably like cheap brands that they slapped their logo on.
Yeah. All right. The next one. Okay, so it's not actually Black Rifle Coffee, which, by the way, I just got added to a Starbucks Workers United group chat. For some reason, I guess I got to go talk to some people. Coffee brand 7 Weeks Coffee launched as an anti-abortion company, deriving its name from the amount of time it may take for a fetal heartbeat to be detected. Jesus fucking Christ.
And why do I want to think about that when I'm drinking coffee?
Because you want to feel good about where you spend your money, Paul. This coffee doesn't kill any babies.
And my other coffee does? A bag of coffee is $23.
I actually don't know how that compares.
As seen on Daily Caller, LifeSite, and Forbes. Oh, do you think the Forbes article we're reading right now is...
Do you think that's what they're counting? That's pretty cool. Do you want to also talk about Black Rifle? How do you feel about it? Because that actually has some mainstream exposure, right? That's like actually doing okay.
Yeah, Black Rifle is... It was much earlier than these, and I think they did a good job not seeming as much like an exclusively insane brand. And that they were more like, oh, we're for veterans. And I assume all the Black Rifle people are just as weird as these people, but they didn't pitch it we're a conservative brand. They pitched as we're a veterans brand, who's a little, like, a little anti-woke, a little bit more like, oh, we like guns and stuff, but I think they did a better job riding the line than this type of shit where you have to be a real believer to buy. I could see, like, a pretty generic person who's just, like, a normal conservative who doesn't listen to conservative podcasts and get super upset all day, every day about this type of stuff, buying Black Rifle coffee.
Do you think that we should launch a coffee company that's named after the number of weeks it takes to transition medically?
I didn't know that was a set number of weeks. I like that.
You know, it probably has some variables to it, but, you know, we can get the average.
Oh, okay. 55.
All right. 55 weeks. Yeah. I don't know. It is interesting to know what your coffee brand's stance on abortion is. I bought a coffee today, and I have no idea what Old Soul's abortion stance is.
That's so true.
All right. You want to read the last one?
Veebs, an app Fox Business called a woke-busting shopping tool, launched in July to help consumers identify the values of the companies that sell products in grocery stores by scanning them to check its V-score, a number from 1 to 100 assigned by Veebs based on the company's political leanings.
Oh my god.
I'm sure a lot of people use this. You don't have to be completely out of your mind.
I mean,
pull
could
out
you not
your
use
Veebs
it to just...
app and check if Cheerios has a Veebs score.
You could technically use it to buy good products.
Oh, if it has a score of 0?
Or a 100? Wait, what is V score? I thought it'd be like if it was more woke, it'd have a higher score. Cheerios would have a high Veebs score, by the way. They
yeah, because babies
couple.
Use them.
Yeah.
Babies love Cheerios, and who's the wokest of them all? Babies.
Yeah, and that's what British people say when they're saying goodbye to you. Surprising fact, some of these brands are actively trying to fight wokeness with their profits. Weather said ultra-right beer will donate a portion of its profits to the 1776 Project and to unseat woke school board members across the country. 7 Weeks Coffee pledges to donate 10% of every single sale to pregnancy care centers across the United States. Which the company says supports at-risk pregnancies through ultrasounds and prenatal care.
Oh, Adrian, I looked it up, and the higher Veeb score is good. If you're 80 through 100, you're great. If you're 1 through 19, you're awful.
Can you scan Big Facts No Cap and see how we are?
Like a FICO credit score or consumer report, it's an opinion-based score in the end. How much money you spend on which brands is your decision alone. I
Dude,
like that
who
they
do you,
still take
who do you think gets paid to do the scoring then?
I don't know. You think just like one groiper?
Yeah.
It's not even automated. He's on the other end looking at the barcode. He's like,
yeah,
that
exactly.
Looks woke.
He's like looking at the like Life is Good shirts and he's like, hey, ain't shit sweet. What are you smiling about? All right, cool. Do you have anything to wrap up our roundup of MAGA companies? Oh, wait, there are a couple more. Let's see. Yeah, there's a section talking about delayed shipping and like how a lot of these places or a lot of these products did not deliver on even the most basic aspect of what they're trying to deliver. We didn't mention this earlier. It was $28 for a pack of 4 chocolate bars for Jeremy's Chocolate.
But Adrian, it was a chocolate first company. He went to the finest Belgian chocolatiers to create these chocolate bars.
Yeah, and then Jeremy's Razors got a lot of feedback about it being very, very low quality.
I don't know. I'm probably going to download Veeb.
Yeah, that could be fun.
All right, we got to
come
anything,
in. We got to
come in with a
I've
book
said
report
about,
next week on 5 Veeb products that we've rated.
If there's one thing that I've always said about grocery shopping is that it's too quick and too efficient, and so I would love to be able to scan everything.
Yeah.
Can you imagine going to Trader Joe's with the Veeb app? Only thing that shows a high score is Dr. Bronner's fucking weird cult soap.
All the offensive Dr. Jose's stuff, they're like, oh, that's cool,
actually. Yeah.
Why don't you get
that's
some
my shit.
Of that?
Get yourself that to the Trader Jose-san.
I think what this has taught us, and it is my big fact as well, is that products should be your identity. You should only buy things that reflect who you are as a person. Consumption is praxis.
And my no cap is, if you want to spend your podcast money on a company that loves you and that loves all the things that you love, spend money on Big Facts No Cap. Join our Patreon.
The Pepsi to our Coke, if Big Facts No Cap is Coke, is, of course, WTF with Marc Maron. That's kind of who we're
the
up
one that
against.
Just ended?
Is the Joe Rogan Experience. That's the league we're in. That's who we're kind of going up against.
And I think we're mutually exclusive goods, yeah.